Welcome back to another episode of the Run Culture Podcast. I've just got off the phone with Rob Nalen. Rob was one of Australia's most promising distance runners of the early 80s, and he was also a former trainee of the legendary Percy Serity. Today, we chatted about a lot of Percy's innovative training methods and his controversial yet effective Stoughton philosophy. It was an insightful chat, and it's fantastic to learn a lot about the history of our sport. I think a lot of runners will find this podcast very useful and will learn a lot about a man who's helped shape the sport we love today. And there's a lot of learnings in this one that I think people need to get back to and appreciate. Anyway, without further ado, enjoy the show. I just wanted to catch up and talk about your running, but then also like, because Robbie also like said, oh, you'd be good to chat to about Percy, and I've got his book like as well, like and I've read it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yep.
And
yeah, it's a great book, that it's very accurate.
What is it?
Yeah, spot on. It's amazing. Somebody who's written it that didn't know him, but it's very, very well written. I've read it a couple of times. It's amazing.
And then I've been following along on the Appreciation Society on Facebook as well. And I think there's a lot of aspects of how he coached, because I guess there's a lot of coaches these days that sort of just buy the book, and it sounds like he was very much an innovator, but then also thought outside the box, and but then also experienced it himself, and experienced like a lot of transformations himself, and then he learnt by doing.
That's for sure. I suppose it was fairly different from a lot of coaches in the days when he started off in the 50s, because he got away from the track, went down to Portsea and had a bit of a shack down there. It was only a pretty little ski hut, he called it, and they'd just train in the around the sand dunes, of course, and around the golf courses and on the tracks, and do weightlifting and eat natural food. So it was, in those days it was sort of a bit unheard of, but most athletes were following Bannister did, or Stanford was his sort of opposite to him, and he was sort of in Melbourne at that stage coaching athletes, but it was all his training was just repetitions on the track, and Percy got away from that and basically made training as natural as possible, but it was, it was only one part of your life that he sort of taught you about. It was, wanting you to be a, better person, not only physically, but mentally, and, maybe a success in all aspects of life, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I think really attracts me to him as well, is that idea that he tried to understand the whole person, and tried to make you a better person. I think as a physiotherapist, that really reverberates with me, because I know when I see some people trying to get over an injury, understanding like their social situation or how they think and their personality, like all of that. Those aspects count so much to how they're going to go with getting over their injury. You read up a lot about a lot of coaches, or you hear about a lot of coaches, and you don't hear that aspect talked about too much. These days, a lot of people just talk about the training sessions they did, and I like that he sort of took an interest of how you're going as a person outside of your athletics?
Yeah, he was a complete dynamo, like as far as, it was more training your mind and more than your body in a lot of ways. It was sort of have that approach. He was probably, there's not many coaches around now that sort of got that attitude where, you know, he was fiery and he'd show by example and, scream and shout and not in a way putting you down so much, but just to fire you up and to, get you to think and to be a, I remember Herb Elliott saying, talking to him, and he said, a lot of people said, anyone could have trained you. And he said, the big difference was that, I would have given athletics away if it wasn't for Purse, because he motivated me to do athletics. And, I stuck it out for a few years and he won a gold medal and got a world record and then retired when he was 22. So, he probably wouldn't even start athletics if he wasn't motivated by somebody like Purse to, do what he did.
And Rob, I'd love to hear more about your running career. I've heard that it was brought short, and you're going really well in the steeplechase. What brought you down to Portsea in the first place? How did you get into running, and how did you get started?
I went to St. Kevin's, and that was involved in athletics at that level, cross country and. Track and field they had in the summer. I heard about Perth when I was about 12 or 13 and decided, I may as well go down. And that was in the early 70s, about 1972, and spent most school holidays down there. And the greatest, I think, aspect of being there, not only, it's having someone like Perth sort of who you knew was, a world-renowned athletics coach, but there was also so many different people down there that you learnt off and motivated you, and you became long time friends with. I've still got friends that I met down there when I was 13 that I still speak to quite regularly, and so it was basically it was probably the you could almost call it Australia's first institute of sport, and I think that's the thing about athletics, it's getting together and learning off each other, like some runners go up to Falls Creek and there's a big group there at Christmas time and you sort of get to know each other and you realise that, somebody who you might have just read about in the paper or on the internet these days, it's, they're just the same as what, you are, and there's they've just done a lot more work and, I was trained a lot in the early 80s or with Deke and Rab and, Dave Chettle. And, you do go out for a regular pack run, probably, three or four times a week, and you become friends and social as well as, you're running along at, 5-minute mile pace and, running the hills and, until your body's screaming out. And but it just becomes just part of your life and, you learn from each other and support each other.
When you look back on those days and the friends that you've made and you still catch up with, what were some of the fondest memories of those times, whether they were training with Percy or whether they were training at Fernie when you look back in the 70s when you're sort of getting into the sport, what are some of the fondest memories that you have when you look back now?
I was fairly young when I was at Portsea. So actually, Perth got me a job there. He said, "Oh, you're too young to train seriously." So I worked for a friend of his, Bill Stacey. It was just a great environment to be in. And, Nancy was in particularly, so good at, accepting and looking after people, person you're saying, I've got an extra couple of mouths to feed, and it was great to, she treated people so well. It was like another mother, and you had people coming and going all the time, like Herb Elliott would drop in occasionally, or Peter Thompson, the golfer, or there'd be people coming in that you know, a new person. You know, it was great to mix with those sorts of people. And then later on, of course, when I got a bit older, I was training a lot with the so-called Pact in Melbourne, which was, you know, Chris Wardlaw and Rob DiCostello and Max Level and, you know, Dave Chettle was training there. Then, again, it was, you know, we had a regular pack of runners of, you know, five, six or seven runners. You know, so Saturdays would run from Chris's house in Mitcham. Sundays would be up at Fernie Creek running there, doing a, you know, 20-mile run. And, yeah, the rest of the week would be training around the town. And it was just great, a great environment to be in. And, you know, at that stage, Deke was sort of leading the world in the marathon. And, you know, we were going, I think about half a dozen of the team for the World Cross Country team came from that pack. So we were sort of, you know, helping each other. And, you know, it was great to, you know, great, you know, friendship. And but also, you know, you're very competitive as well.
And what were your career highlights when you look back and some of your fondest memories of your own running career?
Oh, I suppose the highlight was making a World Cross Country team in 81 and making the Pacific Hopkins Games team in 81 as well. I won a bronze medal in that. And I ran fairly well that year, in the top two or three in the cross country and road in Victoria. And then towards the end of the year, I ran what was like a dress rehearsal of the Commonwealth Games and won a silver medal in that, beating a few top steeplechasers. But then not, there wasn't long after that that I broke my navicular and virtually had a, I don't know, what, six-year gap from athletics where I couldn't run at all. So, and that was sort of a bit of a low life, I suppose.
How did you cope with that time?
It was hard because you don't, you know, obviously when you get injured, you don't know how long it's going to be for. So, initially I was, you know, swimming and it was just treated like a normal stress fracture when I first did it. And they said, I just, you know, an eight-week break should be fine to give it enough rest to heal. And, you know, so you know, swimming and cycling and doing other things to try and keep fit. But, you know, every time, you know, I'd start to run, it just gets sore again. And, you know, I think I spent about 12 months in a cast off and on the next couple of years. So, it's, not easy, but, yeah, worse things happen to people.
When you got back to running, did you try to keep going with the competitive dreams, or the like after those 6 years, did you just run recreationally?
I was sort of had a few more commitments when I got back running. You know, family and didn't really have quite the amount of time to dedicate to running. And, yeah, but I ran for Box Hill competitively, but sort of never really got back to what I was capable of, I don't think.
Yep. Did you get many knock-on injuries on that side, on that leg, after that navicular?
I did have, like, once it healed properly, I've never had any trouble with it again. I've never had another stress fracture. But I've had a couple of plantar fasciitis injuries. And later in life, I've had a couple of arthroscopes on the knee, but it seems to be fine now. So I'm like able at the moment to go and, you know, run about half an hour most days. So that's enough for me to just keep fit.
Yeah. You were saying off air before that you live in Sherbrooke and each Sunday you still go to Fernie Creek to do a run.
Yeah, well, I don't have to go anywhere because they come here.
Yep.
the runners sort of park about half a mile away from where I live, so I sort of meet them in the forest and we go for about an hour's run and then they call past here for a drink. And, yeah, so it makes it a bit easier. I can get up at 10 minutes before I go for a run sort of thing. It felt great to, I used to do a lot of training up at Fernie Creek when I was younger. And, it's a great environment. And I never tire of going for a run through the forest. I had a friend stay recently, Bill Scott. He used to live up this way. He stayed for a weekend. And, he used to do a lot of training through the Dandenongs. He lived at Central Gully when he was younger. It was great to have him come. And he's not running a lot now, but he certainly was one of the greatest runners Australia's produced.
When you look back on all the amazing people that you've sort of run with and rubbed shoulders with, and you can look back now with hindsight and reflect, what do you think Percy did right? What do you think Rab, Chris Wardlaw did right? And all those runners that that era that seemed to go really well around the time that you were sort of running, what do you think they sort of really got right, and what mix and what can people that run today really sort of learn from that era and use today for their own running?
Well, I think the biggest thing they all have in common is their mental approach. Whether it was Purse or Ron Clark or Herb Elliott or, Deke, like I remember Deke saying once, running is 9% mental and 10% physical. It's pretty hard to get that 10%, but, the training, you can get to the top in all different types of training. I certainly think, I'm not a big fan on lots of repetition work, but, people have got there that way. It's a mental approach where you just sort of a slow burn, building up miles and, having the right approach and having that self-confidence without being cocky and just knowing that, what you're doing is the right way to go. And, when you get into that groove that's the right one, you just feel, you get pleasantly tired, but not exhausted all the time. You just sort of build on, brick by brick and, build up your, bank of miles in your legs and, once you get to a certain level, and I think it does take you about 2 or 3 years to, go from, a reasonable runner to, getting to a higher level. I remember Deke, for instance, he was always sort of he was a good runner in the mid-70s, but it wasn't until towards the end of the 70s that he really got serious and, he was doing 150 miles a week, but he was also he was so consistent, he put together something like 1,000 days and double the sessions, which is 3 years without missing, training morning and night. And Deke was a good example of how mentally he was so strong. You'd run with him and, it was an easy run. He'd do an easy one and he wouldn't get sucked into sort of trying to race people and, he'd just have a relaxed run when it's relaxed. And, of course, when he had to, he'd push it. And he was just so consistent. Same Chris Wardlaw or any of these runners or Dave Chettle, they just... they just put in the foundation and just built on it and built on it and built on it. And then, of course, I think what happens if you, fortunate enough to, say, get in a team and go overseas and you mix with, world-class athletes and you then step up to another level and improve again sort of thing.
Yeah. I chatted to Chris Wardlaw a year or two ago on the podcast, and he pretty much just said what you just said. just about consistency over time and being patient. So it's good for everyone to just hear that, and also wanted to bring everyone's attention to the Facebook group that you're a part of, the Percy Cerruti Appreciation Society. Because like I think it's really important for today's runners, keen runners, to know a little bit more about historic figures in the sport, because why not? Like, you can learn so much about people that have gone through things that you're trying to go through, you know, before you. So it's good to so like if we were to like reflect on Percy, like do you mind giving like a little brief sort of up to speed on for everyone on, say, like Percy's history of like how he sort of struggled a little bit when he was sort of in his early 40s, and then he sort of almost self-transformed himself?
Yeah, well, Percy was born about 1895. He did a bit of running when he was younger. You know, it was mainly mile running, and he then got married and worked for PMG. And then as he was probably getting to his 30s and around 40, he had a nervous breakdown physically and mentally. He just, I think a doctor gave him about 6 months to live, so he decided to, you know, change his life and rebuild himself. So he was sort of like born again. He became a vegetarian. He started, you know, it took him, I think, 2 years to run a mile at that stage. You know, he did things like, you know, mentally trained himself by reading books on, you know, from Greek to, you know, all types of, you know, philosophers in the world. You know, remember how he said, you know, got up the courage to dive off the high tower in a swimming pool. But just mental challenges, he hiking and, you know, went up the Alps and, you know, just spent time by himself and pushed himself. And then he had a flat in around the main road in South Yarra. And, just started running and building it up. And, he was the first runner to run around the tank. Those days it was just, you know, the Hawks used to use a tank track for training. And he'd jog around there. And he started, you know, decided, you know, once he built his own body up and got himself fit and healthy, he decided to become a, you know, trainer of men, I suppose he called himself. And he got a small group together of distance runners, and Don McMillan and John Landy, and they started training with him, and he started building them up, and he ended up going over the 52 Olympics in Helsinki with, as a coach with a few of those runners. Don McMillan and John Landy were in that team, and then he met Zatopek over there, and he was inspired then to you know, come back and do more with athletics. He bought a couple of acres of land down at Portsea in the 50s, which, you know, for a few hundred dollars, and it was just, you know, it was just scrubbed and, you know, all the roads were just dirt tracks, and it was all sandy, and yeah, he'd go down there on weekends with a group of athletes and just live basically, you know, similar, as close to nature as possible. You know, and they train three times a day down there, lifting weights and running, you know, through the sand dunes and up the tracks, and you know, becoming physically and mentally stronger. And then eventually, of course, he moved down there, and he you know, then started to build a, you know, an athletic camp, and had the likes, you know, of course, Hervalek came down there in the 50s after he sort of was inspired by Oops at the 56 Olympics, and first inspired him to, you know, give athletics a go. And you know, everyone knows the story about, you know, Herb, of course, winning a gold medal, and then, you know, he coached other athletes, and everyone, yeah, there were all different people that went down there that they weren't all world beaters. You know, some of them were, you know, quite average athletes, but, you know, everyone sort of says that, you know, it changed them, you know, inspired them to be better people, for the, whether it's athletics or to be a better person, you know, in life. And, you know, most people, many certainly remember you know, his charisma and how fit and lively and, you know, he's just, it's, you know, the sort of person that walked in the room and he couldn't, he can command everyone to, you know, look at him and, you know, just was, so full of life and, you know, he was inspiring and, certainly a great person to have met and, it's just a bit of a pity that he, well, more than a bit of a pity, it was so sad that he, you know, died so young at 80 from motor neuron disease. But he sort of certainly lives on and people will be, you know, still are inspired by him through his books and, you know, and what happened down at Portsea and who he trained. And, I suppose it's fortunate there's still a lot of people around that, you know, that knew him personally, but they're sort of getting a lot older now. You know, anyone that sort of coached under him as an athlete are probably in their 70s or some, you know, a lot of them in their 80s are the great athletes of the 50s, of course.
I'd love to hear what a typical day sort of was like down on the Portsea camp. How would a day start? And in terms of, would you run? Like, did everyone eat together and you had bunks I just assumed there was like a lot of sand, running on sand and weightlifting, that's what I've heard, and then sounded like everyone ate together at night, and then everyone shared stories, and Percy seemed to come to life by the sounds of things.
Yeah, well, Percy didn't really coach you as far as wouldn't stand there and stop right watch and get yourself, all right, today you're going to do this or do that. You just, you trained yourself basically at that stage, because Percy was when I was down, he was, you know, mid-70s, and, those days were sort of the real high days of Portsea, of, you know, the super athletes was, it sort of passed. We'd, typical day, we'd get up and, you know, say 7 o'clock and go for a 5-mile run, this is when I was 13 or 14, and then come back, you know, and that'd be typically, you know, you'd head down the track to the beach and along the beach and back along the London Bridge Road or whatever or through the golf course and, finish back at the house and, and that was when I was first introduced to, you know, muesli. This is in the 70s and, you know, it was just made. It wasn't packet muesli at all. It was, you know, you made it yourself out of rolled oats and walnuts and sultanas and a banana and just mix it all together without any milk. It's, Percy didn't believe you should drink milk, but, when you're an adult and if you, if somebody poured milk on it, he'd nearly, he'd come in and just, certainly you wouldn't do it again. and then, typical that, after that, you'd maybe have a bit of a rest and, catch up and with other athletes and do, Percy might have you organise you to do some work or chop down a tree or whatever it is. And then about 12 o'clock every day he used to give his lecture out on his, he had like this small oval right next adjacent to his block. And, people would sit up there with their backs as straight as anything, waiting for Percy to come out, and he'd come out and, he'd jump out up and down and, walk, up and down the track, and or he'd take off and do a lap of the, wasn't big, it was only a little tiny track, but, do a lap of the track demonstrating how to run like a, a galloping or canting or, trotting. He was just full of energy, recalling stories of, when he, with Percy, with Herb or, other athletes overseas and giving examples on all different, not only athletics, but all parts of life and, relating to, people in Victorian politics right through to, what you should do to eat and write and, it was just full of, he just spoke so well on it. It was a delight, and certainly, you were then motivated to maybe go and run a few sand dunes after that, and then have your lunch, which was always a salad, and then head off again, maybe about 5 o'clock for a run around the, train on the golf course, or a hard run out to Diamond Bay or whatever, and then the evenings, he'd organise dinner, of course. There'd probably be 20 people at least, all around the kitchen. There was a bit of a, bench seat, and there was a table, and, they'd be all sitting there eating, and we'd all eat together. And, Nancy was certainly organised all that, and, Percy never really ate with anyone. He ate over in his little study area, but he'd come in and, give us all a few words of wisdom, and, as I said, you get to know other athletes and have a chat to them. And, I was pretty young, so most of the athletes were a lot older than me. So, you sort of took in a fair bit. And, it was a great environment. And, as I said, I think that's what you learn. How you learn a lot of our things is by being a group of people that, are similar minded, and they're, and unfortunately, I suppose there's not a lot around like that now.
Yeah.
There was some sort of a camp where athletes could go. And I said, I think the main advantage is meeting other athletes and talking to them, and realizing it's, not that complicated athletics. You just got to do the work steadily, and, not overtrain, and just build up slowly and stay injury free. And, it's just where you get.
Well, yeah, a few weeks ago when I was chatting to Robbie Morgan Morris, he said the same thing to me. He's like, make sure with the kids that you currently coach, make sure you encourage them to go up to Falls Creek so that they train with others, and they get to speak to other groups and other people, and just learn, because it gets them to think more broadly and I guess question things and be open-minded and maybe get some ideas. And it sounds like that's what Percy did really well. Like, I think reading in his book, wasn't he the president of Victorian weightlifting?
Yeah, he was president of Victorian Weightlifting Association. He started off the VNC. He was involved in Victorian hiking group. he certainly was. And he wrote prolifically, he just wrote, every day he used to write down thoughts of the day, and, write like two-page essay just on his thoughts for that day. But certainly he, a big thinker, and you'd pick up the newspaper down there, and he would have had it at first, and he would have put comments all over the newspaper on different people and different subjects, and but he was he made you think, and made you question things as well, and don't always just follow. You've got to be the person that goes the opposite way.
Yeah, and I like how that name, the Stoughton philosophy, how it's like a combination of Spartan and Stoic principles. And living with nature, and quite minimalistic, and tough, you're roughing it a little bit and you're training quite hard, like that Spartan ideals. And then also the Stoic, just always after the truth, like you're always questioning things and being open-minded and just trying to seek answers.
Some first up is, he used to say quite often, is, what's the good of running a 4-minute mile if you can't appreciate the sunset? He loved art, he loved people that could appreciate finer things in life, as well as, it wasn't just all about, running fast sort of thing.
I think that's a really such a well-rounded and balanced approach, because at the end of the day, it is just running, and a lot of us runners do get a bit too sucked in and we lose perspective and absorbed by it all. So it is healthy to hear stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very hard. It's very easy to get sucked in and look at the times people run and the very best runners in the world, and you think, oh God, how could I ever do that? But I think Perse probably put forward, and other people do too. I know I was talking to Tim O'Shaughnessy not long ago, and he said he sells athletics these days. It's really more of a lifestyle that you'll enjoy the experiences and you'll meet friends, and don't be sort of trying to look at the big picture down the road as far as I'll never break a four minute mile, but enjoy the life and and where it'll take you and the friends that you'll meet along the way, and and anything else is really a bonus. And if you have that attitude of training and enjoying it, eventually you get better and stronger, and you stay in the sport, and eventually if you stay in the sport, you can you'll go a long way.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I really believe in that. I feel like a lot of the time runners get so keen and they just try to force it and make it happen a bit too much, whereas if they took a step back and a slightly more balanced approach, everything seems, this whole system works better, and it kind of just comes to them. I wanted to also ask your idea on with Perse and all the ideas that he came up with, on human movement, inspired by watching horses and animals move, and or his weightlifting. That was quite he was quite early to get distance runners to do weights and things like that. Do you think it was his open-mindedness and his incessant reading and the fact that he didn't mind just trying all these different things that made him become such a pioneer?
I think he was very good at observing things. I know a lot of people thought it was a bit crazy the way he used to describe how to run, a canter and a gallop and a trot and a canter and a gallop. And but he did do a lot of running at Caulfield Racecourse when he was younger. Started training there and watched the racehorses and the beauty of how they ran. But he understood the movement because he knew how to, runners shouldn't, for instance, they should, drop their arms a bit. And, you often said, if you watch a child run, they'll drop their arms and run with a low arm carriage, they won't carry their arms. And that's, he said that's naturally the way you should run. He was good at observing things like that. And certainly, he was at the forefront of, his weightlifting, and he wasn't into lifting, a lot of weights as far as, to build up muscles. It was more to get strength, and, Herb Elliott certainly followed the philosophy that he did. And, it was just... which is probably acceptable now, and most people train this way. He only did about five or six different types of weightlifting, there were curls and deadlifts and bench presses, and his philosophy was, if you can lift a weight, you can lift, say five or six times, and once you can, build that up, and you did it three sets, and once you built that up to sort of, where you could do it maybe 10 times, you went back and then lifted a heavier weight. And started again, so it wasn't so to build up bulk; it was to build strength.
Yep. Have you ever heard the quote that madmen swim in the same water as magicians? You've got to be on there. He was obviously a controversial figure, polarizing.
Some people. Oh yeah, it was. Yeah. People had come down in the 70s with long hair, and know, person jump out and, you know, tell them to get off the property, you know, you look like a girl, you know. I think, you know, famous story, I think Ron Clark came down once and, you know, he was carrying on and, you know, I think he frightened his Helen and they left. Yeah, he told you what he thought and certainly told people, you know, he was a straight shooter. He wasn't someone that just, you know, said, you know, quietly said, you know, things are fine or that was a good run or whatever. Like, you know, example, I think was, you know, Robbie was, I think he finished second in the Australian Championship a few times and, you know, just before the race, Hurst walked into the change rooms and said to Robbie, well, you're going to finish second again? And it made, you know, Robbie so angry that he, you know, won his Australian Championships in 1960 in the steeple. But, yeah, he's led by example that, you know, he'd often run flat out, you know, when Herb had a big race up on the day before, you know, he'd run, person run flat out till, you know, where he's sweating and, you know, to exhaustion and come up to Herb who was sitting, you know, maybe just finished up a light session and put his fetus about, you know, an inch away and said, you might be able to run fast, but you can't run harder. And, yeah, but he certainly, you know, he certainly proved that, you know, led by example, running up the sand dunes, and he wasn't somebody that just sat back and, you know, told people what to do. He was a doer.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think it's always, yeah, it's like I just coincidentally, I run with the kids I coach because it's just easier to fit my runs in. But I think there's something hidden, like, it would be good to stand back and watch because I feel like you could probably see some more. But at the same time, being there and doing it, I think sometimes I'd like to think that that is also inspiring and gets them to listen to me as a coach a little bit more because they're like, well, this guy experiences the sport too and is trying to understand the sport too. Like he's sort of getting that real-time experiential knowledge of the sport. So yeah. I think that's something that you don't see every coach do, like Percy just sprinting around the track.
Yeah. And, yeah, well, I remember, like, people like Pat Colesi used to do the same thing. They'd run with the, like, I only did Q when I was growing up and often caught up with the Xavier runners to, and they'd run sort of close to where I live. You know, that was, you know, when it was about, Deke was about 15 and Tim O'Shaughnessy was a couple of years older and, you know, Pat would be running along and there'd be this big mob of Xavier runners with Pat running with them and, you know, they'd just do the usual Q circuit and do a few run-throughs and, you know, Pat inspired them to get out there and, you know, they produced a lot of good runners, you know, in particular Deke and younger brother Nick and, of course, Tim O'Shaughnessy and it was all inspired by, you know, Pat, who became one of, you know, Deke's coach and took him all the way to a world championship and, you know, that also was inspired by Rab, who, you know, had a lot to do with Deke as well because he trained with, together. Pat was another one, you know, showed by example and being a fairly great athlete himself. He was, you know, and he was a quiet achiever. He sort of, you know, he spoke to people on a quieter level and, you know, encouraged them and, you know, was a great motivator that way.
Yep. And then with the barefoot running and then the sand dunes, were there many injuries? And when you look back on some of the practices that Percy did, did you or any others not just the sand dunes, but any of the ideas that he came up with, like disagree with any of them and talk back or like obviously like so many of his principles still live on, and they're so good, and they're really adding to you know, people's training today, like the weights training, the barefoot running on sand dunes, etc. But like, did anyone ever sort of talk back, and how did Percy sort of deal with that?
I can't really recall someone talking back to him. Like, you know, he would have grabbed them by the throat and threatened to, you know, knock their head off. Yeah, everything was just, you know, you never thought, oh, I'm running bare feet, because, you know, it's just the way it was easy to go for running bare feet. I think it's probably, you know, great way to train when you're younger, bare feet, especially on, you know, those sort of surfaces where, like, we're running on sand or dirt tracks and that. You can't really do it a great deal these days, even down in Portsea. They're all bitumen roads now, and, you know, we'd run around the golf courses barefoot, but the running shoes weren't that great in those days either. You know, you had the Target, you know, the running marathon runners, which were about a quarter of an inch thick. And that's, you know, great way, you know, running on. Everything was, I suppose, everything was natural. So it was, you know, you sort of were banging your head against, you know, a brick wall to sort of, as far as, you know, everything was, you know, it was good, healthy food. It was just, you know, natural. It was, you know, a healthy environment. You know, you're just on the, you know, out in the tracks on the, and down the sand, you know, weights were, you know, free weights, and it just wasn't in a formal gym like you see these days. You know, you're using weights like, you know, could have been an old railway wheel, or, you know, a bit of, you know, they weren't, you know, it was just all out in the open. Yeah, there was lots of free time where you just, you know, as I said, you got to talk to people and have a chat, and there were all people from all different walks of life that came down, as far as, you know, the sport. You know, you had tennis players, you had, you know, a lot of footballers came down. Tom Hafey used to take a lot of Richmond players down there. You know, you had boxers. Yeah, they were all sort of attracted to this place at Portsea, where, you know, they came from all over the world to spend a few weeks there and to find out, you know, what it was all about. Of course, you know, it was, I suppose, at that stage, a bit magical, because, you know, you had this, you know, super athlete like Herb Elliott that never lost a race, and then, you know, they were trying to figure out what's this secret formula that was down at Portsea, and it was, you know, the secret formula was just, you know, back to nature and enjoying your runs and, you know, running, you know, on natural surfaces and eating natural food and, you know, just there's no big secret. It's just, I suppose it's when you look at it, a lot of the Kenyans and Africans are running that way. They're running bare feet and they're just running in groups around.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing, is like, we often overcomplicate it, and these days with so much information out there, it's so good to hear a story like this, just humans getting back to nature and keeping it simple. Like, we've got, you know, Garmin GPS watches these days, we've got those fancy Nike, or well, any brand has those marathon shoes now, I guess, there's so much information on social media and online. There's so many runners that I feel are disconnected to no one. There's a lot of runners that wouldn't have run barefoot. There's a lot of runners that wouldn't have run without a watch and just sort of tried to feel what running feels like without a watch, and not be dictated so much by splits and So it's really good to hear a story like this, as simple as it sounds. I think today's age overcomplicates it a lot.
Yeah, well, I think somebody else who was sort of on a similar wave to what Perth was, of course, Arthur Lydiard. And, you know, it was just all about, you know, building up mileage, as far as, you know, not necessarily killing yourself with miles, but building up your strength and doing it over a long period of time, and he was more in tune to sort of peaking for particular races. He was going along a similar vein to what Purse was.
I think that's a great insight, Rob, to Percy and then your running. Is there any parting sort of words or messages that you feel like it'd be great for runners to hear about Percy or that's what just anything that's just on top of your mind?
I think everyone's different, and you sort of, it doesn't matter if you're aiming at running a 4-minute mile or you're aiming at running a 5-minute mile. We're all on our own journey, and it's all about just taking the journey by ourselves and enjoying it, and not maybe looking too far ahead at the top of the mountain. You just take one step at a time and enjoy the journey.
Yeah, that's unreal advice. I think it's easy to think five steps ahead with where you want to be, and then you're not even present at what's the next logical step. And but then also so many people are comparing themselves to someone they want to be or comparing themselves to other people. But I think the best thing about running is we're all going through like a similar kind of thing. Like it's a process of just learning, and then the reason why we run is so different. Like everyone's running for different reasons, but it's just a process of growth, and it can be such a good teacher in so many ways, whether it's the people you mingle with or the challenges that you try to work towards, and you find out a lot about yourself. I really enjoyed this chat, Rob, and thanks for, we've had a bit of troubles initially getting together online. Reception wasn't too good, thanks so much for your time, and I know a lot of runners will appreciate listening to this.
Oh, that's great. Anyway, it's been a pleasure chatting to you, and keep running and enjoy it. That's amazing.
Thanks, Rob.
No worries.